Right, so I'm going to be talking about thermally isolated Lagrangian liquids with noisy Hamiltonians. This is a reference to our work with Luca D'Alessio, who's at Boston University. Right. So this is the outline. First, I'm going to give you an introduction and some motivation. Then I'll discuss the generic setup of the problem you're considering. I'll talk about two types of energy moments that we use to characterize the fluctuations of energy in a noise-driven quantum system. Then I'll talk about these fluctuations in a noisy Lagrangian liquid. I'll then talk about correlation functions of a noise-driven Lagrangian liquid. I'll then give you a rather powerful approach to this problem based on the Fokker-Planck equation, and I'll close with a summary. By the way, feel free to ask questions during the talk. Okay, so I guess everyone in this audience knows that cold atoms have motivated very extensive studies of non-equilibrium quantum dynamics of thermally isolated systems. So this is the topic of this workshop, and there's been a recent review with the same title. So the name of the game here is basically unitary evolution. And this field can be summarized in time-dependent Schrödinger equation, so which is a fully deterministic differential equation. And basically, what we're interested in is to have some parameter in our Schrödinger equation that has some sort of time dependence. So the classic problems that have been widely studied are quantum quenches, that this parameter suddenly changes, or different kinds of ramping, like a linear ramp. So basically, the story is, you know, we have some initial state, and we change the Hamiltonian in some way, and we want to see what happens at a later time. And of course, this is a very broad question. This encompasses many different angles. The case that's much less explored is the case of stochastic driving of the system. So here, basically, the protocol I'm thinking of is this parameter in the Hamiltonian shaking, having small random fluctuations as a function of time. And so this problem is rather more difficult because now, instead of thinking about one deterministic evolution, I have to think about an ensemble of quantum evolutions. So I want to consider basically disorder in time in my protocol. Okay? So the generic setup I'm thinking of is, you know, having some Hamiltonian in the ground state of a parameter, and then that parameter starts to have these random small fluctuations over time t, and then later at time t I do some measurement. So to be completely kosher, because, for example, we're interested in energies, and I don't want to think about measuring the energies with respect to fluctuating Hamiltonian, I imagine that the measurements are done with respect to a fixed Hamiltonian. So basically, I want to understand the effects of this noisy evolution on the wave functions. And as I mentioned, the new ingredient here is averaging over noise. So I have to mention a couple of recent studies that have looked at different aspects of noise in thermally isolated systems. The types of questions I'm going to ask are pretty simple. So as you shake the system, you're pumping energy into it, and we want to see how we can characterize this absorbed energy. And also, we're interested in understanding how the correlation functions are affected by the stochastic drive. Okay. So let me first talk about this absorbed energy. So, of course, it's a time-dependent random variable. And to characterize a random variable, the first thing we do is to look at average and variance. But, you know, for one realization of noise, you basically have a system that's evolving unitarily, coherently. So for each realization of noise, I have a coherent superposition. And then I need to clarify now what we mean by like energy. So in fact, there are two sources of fluctuations in these systems, right? One is classical. Basically, I have this external classical noise, and different realizations of noise result in different wave functions. So this sort of statistical classical source of fluctuations is encoded in some probability distribution that I will get for my wave functions. And there's also inherent quantum fluctuations, which has to do with the internal structure of these wave functions and what kinds of superpositions they're in. So if I'm an experimentalist and I do this experiment, I let the system evolve with this noisy Hamiltonian, and I do a measurement of energy, I can basically do that over and over again and make a histogram, so I will get some distribution function for the measured energy at a later time, shown in blue here. And that's fine, so maybe that's how we should basically define these average and variances. So basically we can think of them with respect to this distribution function that I will get experimentally. But as a theorist, we would like to understand more. We would like to understand the effects of these individual sources. So here, you know, the contributions of these two sources are completely mixed. There is no easy way to tease them apart. But we can cook up a theoretical diagnostic. Basically, I can imagine the probability distribution of expectation of quantum expectation values of energy over different realizations of noise. So this is basically the distribution function of a quantity that's already quantum averaged. So the fluctuations here only stem from this classical stochastic nature of driving and the fact that I have a distribution for my wave functions. Now, this serves as a diagnostic for the importance of these two sources, because if the two distribution functions are very close, it means that basically classical fluctuations are everything. So it means that classical fluctuations dominate. And if they're very different, it implies that quantum fluctuations are important. So now these two distribution functions give us two kinds of moments written here in terms of this wave function probability distribution. I can think of this as, you know, joint probability distribution for all the real numbers that I need to label my wave function, and so also deep psi is shorthand for integration over all of those numbers. So the first one, the normal experimental one, I can write also in terms of the density matrix. There is a second one that I cannot write in terms of the density matrix, but nevertheless, I can express in terms of this wave function probability distribution. So if m is equal to 1, these two are the same, so I have one kind of average, and then if m is equal to 2, they're different, so I have two kinds of averages. So these are basically the quantities we use to characterize the absorbed energy.
So the psi here refers to the initial, is not over different?
So psi is the wave function. So imagine you start from a given wave function, and you let the system evolve with different realizations of noise, so you end up in an ensemble of wave functions with some probabilities. So this is the wave functions that you can have, you know, at time t. So this is really a massive joint probability distribution. Each wave function, let me label it with a whole bunch of numbers.
So if you're discussing a mixed state, as you are, really, then would it be useful to talk about other traces and powers of a density matrix as well. I mean, averages with respect to powers of the density matrix and that kind of thing. Like Renyi entropies, but
right. Right. So you're saying,
is related to what you're doing, or is that something different?
In what sense is there a density matrix?
So the density matrix is going to be integral deep psi f of psi.
The probability distribution of wave functions. Yeah. So rho represents a mixed state, right?
Right. I mean, rho is exactly this integral here, and then I have psi ket psi bra. That's basically my density matrix. Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to think about the distribution of eigenvalues as well on that kind of thing.
Could be, I'm not sure. Could be. I don't think it sort of relates to. It's not very clear to me that this quantity you can express.
Can I ask a related question? So that density matrix, as you define it, it's not really written. It's not a matrix in some orthon, because these different size are obtained by doing different sort of experiments. So they're not necessarily orthogonal to each other.
They're not necessarily, but. I mean, for a density matrix, it's just, you know, sum over p, psi 1, psi. Yeah, I mean, they don't have to be, right?
So this over bar is a disorder average?
Over bar is, yeah, noise average, disorder average. And this is quantum average. Okay. So now we take the simplest system that we can take, namely a Luttinger liquid. It has two parameters, u and k. And I want to do the simplest thing, so I want one parameter to fluctuate. And, well, u would be boring. It's an overall scaling. So I let my Luttinger parameter k do to fluctuate. So it turns out that in the presence of noise, even this simplest system is not that simple because, OK, so the traditional way to deal with noise is that you just integrate it out at the very beginning. And you obtain, you know, effective action that can give you noise average quantities, right? So, but if I do that, so different realizations of noise have a Gaussian weight, and if I do that, because my delta k is coupled to quadratic terms in the bosonic fields, I get quartic terms in my effective action, and basically I throw out the window all the simplicity that I had here. So we don't like that. We take a different approach. Basically, we directly work with the wave functions. So the idea is this Hamiltonian, everybody knows, is a sum of harmonic oscillators. In particular, if I break phi into real and imaginary part, it becomes a sum over decoupled harmonic oscillators. And now I know that the ground state of a harmonic oscillator is a Gaussian, right? So initially, I have a Gaussian wave function. And it's well known that if you evolve a Gaussian with a generic quadratic Hamiltonian, you retain the Gaussian form, except you get a parameter here that can become complex. So this is basically how I represent my many-body wave function. And then the time-dependent Schrödinger equation translates into a Riccardi equation for these parameters. And they all have the same initial condition coming from the initial k. Now, okay, so now what I want to do is k0 plus delta k, and delta k is small, so I can expand this expression in delta k and get a Langevin equation. I get a stochastic differential equation, and this delta alpha is just defined proportional to delta k, and then I put white noise for delta alpha. So if it makes me uneasy that I put a delta function correlator that can diverge for a small quantity that I just expanded in, well, I agree with you. So what you're really thinking about is having colored noise with a finite correlation time that's decaying exponentially. And then we're interested in time scales much longer than this finite correlation time. And in addition to that, we're also interested in the limit of very small w's. So basically, for that problem, there is no divergence. And it turns out that white noise, when our time scales are longer than this finite correlation time, qualitatively reproduces the same results. It actually, in some regimes, done explicit calculations with a finite correlation time in noise, and we found that this is true, exists. Okay. So now, as I mentioned, we're interested in small w, and the main motivation for that is that our theory is basically a low-energy theory. So if I excite the Luttinger liquid to very high energies, I basically may not have a Luttinger liquid, right? I mean, because the assumption is that I have this linear dispersion that goes off to infinity, and that in realistic systems, that's not the case. So this motivates to take a perturbative approach, basically where delta z is small, so your wave function has not changed too much from the ground state. So I'll get back to the nonlinearities, but let me just go on with this perturbative approach. So here, if I expand my Langevin equation in delta z, I get the simplest Langevin equation, which has an explicit solution. And quantities of interest I can similarly expand in delta z, and you know, it becomes pretty straightforward to find quantities. So here's an expression for noise average expectation value of energy, which is extensive and goes linearly in time in this region.
So the z, how is that related to the original fields, like phi or whatever you want to call them?
Well, right. So the wave function, basically, I'm representing my wave function in the first quantized representation. So this z, here I have phi, this is, you know, phi.
Right.
And this is just some parameter in the wave function.
So now if you wanted to write out sort of the regular equations of motion for that phi, like you would for the normal Lottinger liquid, what happens to that based on what's going on with the z's? So you should be able to get out the equation of motion for the harmonic modes, right?
Yeah, yeah. So you're talking about the Heisenberg equations for the upper.
Yeah, so somehow that should get very renormalized by, or all.
Well, I mean, these are very, this is sort of the Schrodinger picture, and that's sort of the Heisenberg picture, right? So there is, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to be equivalent under some change of variables.
But it's not thing like density, what would it be doing?
Yeah, so I'll get back to that. Okay. Density is basically a derivative of phi.
Exactly.
And then I'll get back to when I discuss the correlation function.
Can I ask another question? So if you had done this the original way, then the quartic terms that arise would, in general, potentially entangle different modes, right? And then the first quantized way you're doing it,
yeah,
you're assuming that the...
Well, the trick is that they're yeah, I mean, formally they're decoupled, but they're all being driven by the same noise, so that's what correlates them.
Okay, but I mean, is that what has simplified the description, that you've neglected the possibility of any...
I basically pushed the difficulty until the very end, right? So I basically pushed the noise averaging until the very end, and now I'm talking about just one realization of noise.
But they're not quantum entangles, right? I mean, for each realization of the noise, the different hues are not entangled.
Sure, right. No, he was saying that if I have this quartic term...
It will look like...
It'll look like, okay, sure.
Right. I mean, in terms of noise average things, they're correlated, right?
Yeah, they're more correlated than...
Right.
Another question. So you're imagining getting to this Luttinger liquid because there are formally some irrelevant terms that you've thrown away and writing down a Gaussian description?
Yeah, basically, right. I imagine I'm in the low energy limit, right.
Like, but when you put in the noise, you have to worry about whether...
Well, it depends how much I excite, right? Right. If I that's exactly what breaks the model. So if I have this Lettinger liquid, and if the expectation value of energy is too high, I've excited too much, and then, yeah, those irrelevant terms, if you wish, break my model, and then I can't go on, basically.
And so when you say perturbative, you mean what exactly do you mean perturbative in what sense? I mean, what do you mean?
Exactly in the sense that the absorbed energy is small. So the deviation
energy, and then sort of come back and check that it's a small number. Is that
right? Yes. Yes.
If the harmonic oscillator Hamiltonian, you have the frequency which depends on time. Can you really write down that wave function?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Independent on the time, dependent
yes.
on the parameter.
Yes. It's something you have to check. You just put this into time-dependent Schrodinger equation. Yeah, it's been used before by, I think, Anatoly.
This is property of the, just to my understanding, it's a property of the oscillator.
Of being, harmonic oscillator.
But in general, it's not.
Yeah, that's true. It's a property of your quadratic.
So the condition has to satisfy, it has to satisfy the Riccati equation.
Sorry?
This is...
Right, exactly. So if you put, you know, that ansatz into time-dependent Schrodinger equation, you
get the Riccati equation, and that's how you get.
How am I getting the time?
You have about 10 minutes.
Good, okay. So let me try to speed up a little bit. So now this was the expectation value. Let me now talk about the moment. So I had two types of moments, and my Hamiltonian was a sum over single mode Hamiltonian, so real and imaginary correspond to taking real and imaginary part of this phi. So basically, if I compute these guys, I get terms of this form here, and I get terms of this form here. So, but my wave function is a direct product, and basically these two things will be different if I'm in the same real or imaginary sector and the momenta are the same. So that gives a relationship between these two types of moments. Okay, so let's keep that relationship in mind. We subtract expectation value of energy quantity squared, so we get these two types of variances, and then I have this term here. So this is a sum over Q. This goes as linear in system size. And it turns out that these variances go as quadratic in system size. So basically, you know, each of these terms is obviously like L squared. What's not obvious is that when you do the subtraction, the L squared term does not cancel, and what remains is also L squared. But if that's the case, okay, so I find that this guy in the thermodynamic limit is a sub-leading correction. And in the thermodynamic limit, classical fluctuations don't. And this is in contrast, so the fact that these guys are order L squared is in contrast with thermodynamics right there. You know, if I think of sort of standard deviation of energy divided by energy, I usually have this factor of 1 over volume, 1 over square root of volume that kills it. Here I don't have that factor. So this guy comes from an explicit calculation. Here's the result. So I have basically L squared, T squared, some stuff, and this function here. So think of T as some dimensionless time because I've set velocity and lattice space into one. So then I find that initially this guy goes up as T squared, and for later time, this goes as 1 over X, so it goes up as T. And then basically this guy is that energy that I computed before squared. So there is this relationship between the variance and average, which is independent of K0 and W. And it basically, okay, now if I divide by, let's say, E squared and take the square root, I find that standard deviation divided by energy, instead of sort of becoming small as 1 over square root of volume, becomes small as 1 over square root of time.
Can you explain the origin of this L squared? So do I think about different modes as uncorrelated?
No, exactly. That's exactly what gives you L squared. Different modes, they're being driven by the same noise, right? So they're...
I think reinitialization of noise, everything will be extensive.
Right, so basically it comes from the fact that once you average over noise for different modes, you have the same noise. I think that's the key.
I think just to clarify, like on the left hand side, you mean O of L, right? I mean, otherwise, this can't make sense.
Wait, left hand side of where?
Square. So is it really the same quantity left?
Sorry, what's the question?
It says two expressions in red, I thought they just cancel off, but the first term.
Right. The first terms are.
Okay.
So these are exactly those two types of variances that I talked about earlier. Okay, so.
Can you explain how it technically happens? Because before doing noise average,
right.
I whatever the quantity you have, this variance is sum over Q or something, right? Because modes are correlated. So it's proportional to L. Okay. But then you're saying once you perform additional average over noise.
No, wait, what is proportional to L?
Just if I look into variance of E. Like the first term on the left.
Well, it's. No, think about
it. So given noise realization, energy variance is proportional to the noise. And I'm just curious if you add. Different modernizations, how it becomes
unscaled. Well, yeah, I mean, I can show you the calc, but basically, if I start computing this guy, right, I write, you know, a sum over HQ1 and sum over HQ2 multiplying each other, right? And then, you know, so you have, when you expand this guy, some of the terms, basically give you exactly this connected part, and there are some terms that are left out. And the number of those terms basically goes as L squared. So I mean, I can show you the explicit Right, so I said that, so I said that the wave functions are determined by ZQ, and this is going back to your question. So now, if I think of correlation functions, I can express them in terms of ZQ. So this is a bosonic correlation function, and it will have some expression in terms of ZQ, right? Basically, I have to we want to compute this expectation value, so I can expand these guys in momentum modes, and that wave function in Fourier space gives me the sort of the weight to do the average. Now, okay, so these correlation functions in the ground state have some form, and what it turns out that if I do this perturbative calculation, so I expand sort of z again in z0 plus delta z, I find that they all sort of the correction to this ground state, they follow this pattern. So they grow as t cubed, there's this anomalous exponent that comes in. And now in the asymptotic limit also, they sort of, so if I think of log as having scaling dimension zero, well basically the x has whatever I had plus four. So that's the pattern that, basically the first two calculations of course are identical, the second one is sort of derivative of the first, but the last one is also rather.
You don't have the original Luttinger parameter
anymore? Well, no, you do. No, I mean here probably. Yeah, it's probably the overall coefficient. So here and here it appears in the overall coefficient, and here this exponent nu, if you're actually like considering backscattering, does depend on the Luttinger parameter. Okay, so let me briefly talk about an alternative approach. So far everything we did was perturbative in delta z. We linearized Langevin equation and we expanded. So can we go beyond this? This was our nonlinear Langevin equation. So a systematic approach is based on the Fokker-Planck equation. So the formalism is as follows. If I have a vector of stochastic variables with a bunch of coupled Langevin equations, I can construct the Fokker-Planck equation for the probability distribution of these stochastic variables, and then the noise average expectation value of some function of these stochastic variables is given by an expression like this. So this is basically f of a of t. It's the formal solution to the Fokker-Planck equation. Now, in analogy with the Heisenberg picture, I can evolve my function instead of the distribution function, so it involves many, many integrations by part. But then that's nice because this integration becomes trivial. Usually this guy is a bunch of delta functions, right? So this gives a systematic way to obtain a Taylor expansion for these noise average expectation values. Basically now, if G doesn't have explicit time dependence, I just expand this exponential and it directly gives me a Taylor expansion. And sometimes if I can resum, I can get an exact solution. And this is the case for noise average energy. So this was our perturbative solution. I expanded energy of one mode in delta z. I had this linear Langevin equation, and for one mode I found this relationship, which upon integration gave, you know, something extensive. Now this is the story for the full nonlinear part. So I have a more complicated expression for the energy of one mode. These are the real and imaginary part of ZQ. I have, if I break my Langevin equation into real and imaginary part, I have two coupled Langevin equations. So I have this huge differential operator that acts on this function many, many times, and then you insert some specific values into this resulting expression. And rather surprisingly, we find that term by term, this guy matches a simple exponential. So if I really have this Luttinger liquid that, you know, really has a spectrum linearly going to infinity, which is rather mathematics, you know, than physics, I will have exponential blow up of my energy, and this would be the expression that I get. Of course, in the limit of small w that we're interested in, that, you know, Luttinger liquid doesn't break, I can again re-expand this and obtain what I obtained before perturbing. Okay, so good. Right in time. Right, so we studied thermally that isolated Luttinger liquid that was driven with a noisy Luttinger parameter, and we basically did this by mapping to a classical scattering problem. We characterized the fluctuations of energy in noise-driven quantum systems by two types of energy moments, and based on this, we argued that in this case, classical fluctuations dominate in the thermodynamic limit. And we found two relationships that I wouldn't want to call them universal, but they show some interesting features. So we have this exponent t cubed that seems to appear in two different correlation functions, and also this relationship here. Thanks.
Returning to my question, so I think maybe interpretation of the result it means that from given noise realization to another noise realization, reciprocal expectation values this difference extensive in system size. And the second is probably, if we briefly talk to Luke about it, it's fine to use this terminology, but it's not really quantum and classical. You can start from statistical ensemble, which is purely classical, and it will have fluctuations due to statistical uncertainty. Mm-hmm. But then you put on top of that noise, and you just ask what is important, the fact that we have different realizations of noise, mm-hmm. or the fact that we have initial uncertainty fluctuations.
Sure, but of course, in this case, you know,
both are classical, but it's
sure. But in this case, you know, one is quantum, right? So
yeah, but okay, it's language.
So what would you suggest?
It's like the thermal fluctuations and the sample-to-sample fluctuations
yes.
in a disordered system.
Yes,
Well, I was going to ask, let's see, can you also solve your Fokker-Planck equation and use that for the correlation functions to see whether this t cubed versus x to the fourth scaling?
We haven't tried that yet.
Continues to higher orders?
We haven't tried that yet.
Because
it's certainly
interesting
could. Yeah.
Dynamical exponent patterns.
Sure, yeah, we certainly could. We haven't tried it yet. There wasn't.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, so maybe we can save questions for coffee break, because we're already a little bit over time, so let's